Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody
fray. Hi folks, this is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Show, episode number 53. And why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. This is one of the more practical firearms podcasts. I don't get real technical. I like to start every show by telling everybody listening, I'm not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm just a private citizen who believes strongly in my Second Amendment rights, and I've been carrying a pistol a little over 5 years for personal protection, so I share my personal experiences with you. Nothing more, nothing less. You're going to get my opinion once in a while, it comes out, but I'm going to talk about practicality. Okay, and today's show is a little bit different than what I've been putting out. For the previous 52 podcasts, you've either heard me talk about my favorite hobby and favorite thing I like to do, which is shoot firearms, or you have heard audio sound bites that I have been able to get from various places that fit the subject that I'm talking about. Well, this is the first ever interview that I'm doing on the Handgun World Show. I'll tell you who I interviewed, and you're going to hear the entire interview that I did in just a minute, but I wanted to lay out the subject matter for you. There are basically two specific topics that I talk to this person about. One of them is a political subject. Now, I don't like to make this show real political. All right? I think political beliefs are, it's too much of a hot button topic. Of course, some people say, well, geez, Bob, you know, guns are a hot topic too. Well, they are, but we all know that we're tuning in to this podcast to hear a gun show. So I don't like to impose my politics on anybody. Truthfully, folks, please hear me on that. But this is something that does affect all firearms owners. Recently in the state of Oklahoma, Senate Bill 1685 was called the Oklahoma Firearms Freedom Act. And it was very similar to the law that was passed in Montana. And basically, what that law would have done would be make any gun that was manufactured in the state of Oklahoma. Now, folks, I know I have international listeners to this show. And for some of you who are not from the United States and don't quite understand how our politics work here, states can make some of their own laws. You know, that's why we're called the United States of America, that we do have states' rights in this country. And this would have given the ability for any gun manufacturer that makes a firearm in the state of Oklahoma, and as long as that firearm stays in the state of Oklahoma, guess what? It would not be subject to federal regulation by the United States government. Okay? Well, the legislature of Oklahoma passed this law by more than three-quarters majority. All right? So it passed overwhelmingly, Republicans and Democrats. As a matter of fact, the Senate passed it 39-3, and the House approved it 81-14. So, huge margin of victory. Well, guess what? Oklahoma Governor Brad Henry, Democrat, vetoed that bill. Now, the legislature is preparing to try to override the governor's veto. It would take them 76 votes in the House. They had 81 the first time. And 36 votes in the Senate. Well, they had 39 the first time. So I think they've got a pretty good chance of overriding the governor's veto. Okay? Now, it's important that you understand. Montana, Tennessee, Utah, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Idaho have already passed bills just like this one. And there's plenty of other states considering the same thing. If this is vetoed, again, a gun that is made in Oklahoma and stays in Oklahoma, it would not be subject to federal regulation. Now, the governor of Oklahoma vetoed it basically on the argument that he felt it would make people less safe. Go figure. Okay? And he also put forth kind of a weak argument. You know, he said that the law would have violated the Interstate Commerce Act because there'd be no way to guarantee that the Oklahoma-made guns and the Oklahoma-made ammunition would remain in the state. I think that's kind of a weak argument, all right? My humble opinion, the federal government really shouldn't be messing with states' rights to pass gun laws anyway, because what's the Second Amendment all about? But I guess that's a topic for another podcast. I also talked to this person that I interviewed about RBCD ammo. Several weeks back, somebody emailed me and asked me, what did I think of RBCD brand ammunition? I did some research, I gave an answer, but the gentleman that I'm going to bring on in just a few minutes has been using RBCD for a long time and believes in it, and that's all he carries in his 1911 45s. So he does a better job than what I thought I did explaining why the benefits of RBCD ammo. So again, we're going to talk a little bit about a political issue. We're not going to get too hung up on it. This person that I interviewed made some really, really good points. But we're going to talk about the Oklahoma Senate Bill 1685 that so far is still trying to become law. And then we're going to talk about RBCD ammo. Now, my guest on this show is a friend of mine. Somebody I've known for a few years, and he asked me to keep his name confidential, but he said it was okay for me to use his screen name. Now, for those of you who don't know, I do another podcast every week called Today's Survival Show. It's about modern survival concepts, common sense, no tinfoil hat kind of survival and preparation and living a successful life, pretty much. Like I mentioned, even if it's not your cup of tea, even if you don't really like survival and that kind of stuff, we have a great weapons forum over there. So if some of you want to interact with other listeners from this show, come join us over at Today's Survival Forum, Today's Survival Show Forum. I will put a link in the show posting, or you can go to todayssurvival.com/forum. This gentleman's username is Long Range Tactical. Good username for a gun podcast, huh? Long Range Tactical. That's his screen name over there at the forum, and he's also a moderator over there. So when you hear me refer to him as Long Range, now you know why. Now, I was using the beautiful technology called Skype and my recorder. And by the way, this guy that I interviewed, he did not even know that I was going to call him up and interview him. Even though he's a friend of mine, I just kind of called him up, you know, as if it was two friends talking, and say, hey, how you doing, Long Range? What's going on? And once we started talking, I asked him, I said, you know what? I have an idea. Let's talk a little bit about the Oklahoma Firearms Freedom Act, Senate Bill 1685. I know you probably have some opinions on it, and I also know that you like to carry RBCD ammo. I said, would you mind if I just flip on my recorder, record this conversation, and make a podcast out of it? He thought it was a good idea, and so that's exactly what we did. So this is the first ever interview. Now, before I play this interview, I want to say one more thing. If any of you listening to this show would like to be interviewed on the Handgun World Show, if you have an area of expertise or if you have some good, strong opinions on something, you know, I'm an open-minded person, folks. You know, my mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open. I like opinions of all types, and it was suggested early on that I make this show an interview format. The show has been fairly successful the way it's been, but I definitely believe in getting other people's views, other people's opinions. I don't care what the subject is. If you want to talk about a political issue regarding firearms, if you want to talk about a certain gun, a certain ammo, a certain shooting technique, sights, magazines, what have you, I don't care. Whatever you want to talk about, I'd be happy to call you up, bring you on the show, and you know, we'll talk about it in advance, and we'll talk about some of the questions I'm going to ask you. But again, I want you to know, folks, this interview I'm about to play for you was an unprepared interview, and I like the way it came out. So, without any further commotion about it, I'm going to go ahead and flip the interview on here. If you want to be on the show, just send me an email. You can use the contact page. So, here you go. It's going to be a little bit of a different audio quality. You may have to tweak the volume a little bit on your dial there, but here we go. Here's my interview with Long Range Tactical talking about Senate Bill 1685 in Oklahoma and also talking about RBCD ammo. Okay, folks, I have a special guest on the line with me. He goes by the username Long Range Tactical, and he is a member, actually one of our moderators and one of the very first members that ever joined our forum over at Today's Survival Show forum. And for those of you that don't know, that web address is todayssurvival.com/forum. We have an excellent weapons discussion over there, so come join us if you want. So he has asked me to keep his name confidential. That's okay. I respect that. So I'm going to refer to him as Long Range Tactical because that is his username, is Long Range Tactical. You there, Long Range?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. I enjoy it.
Well, good. Yes. And so the reason I wanted to bring you on is for two things. I want to talk about, in the state of Oklahoma, I want to talk about Senate Bill 1685, which is known as the Firearms Freedom Act. And it's modeled after some similar legislation that has manifested itself in other states of the country. I understand that the governor of Oklahoma recently vetoed that. Is that right?
Yes, he did. That'd be Governor Henry in the state of Oklahoma. We actually had in the House and in the Senate, it actually passed overwhelmingly, but he felt that he had the need to veto the bill based solely on fear that, much like every other liberal idea is that if there's a potential for danger, then it's already there when there really is no danger to begin with. That would create tons of jobs in the state of Oklahoma. We would have a gun manufacturing plant out here that would allow us, and it doesn't even have to be a traditional gun manufacturing company. It could be a brand new one. There was no mention in there that you had to use, say, Smith & Wesson or Colt or Bushmaster or Armalite, any of them companies. They could make their own company and make essentially design their own firearms. There's tons of gunsmiths out here in the state of Oklahoma that could put in their own input as well. There'd be a lot of place for jobs.
Yeah.
For people to actually earn a good living.
Well, and I agree with you on that, Long Range. And you know what? Let me read something to you. Get your opinion on it. I don't like to make this show real political, but it is important that we understand the political aspects that is behind the governor's veto of this. So let me read this to you because I'm getting this off of the website gunowners.org, and then I want you to comment on it, okay?
All right.
It says that Senate Bill 1685 passed the Oklahoma State Senate by an overwhelming margin of 39-3, and it passed the House of Representatives by a vote of 81-14. It's a simple concept. It states that if a gun was made in Oklahoma and then stays in Oklahoma, then the federal government may not regulate it under the Interstate Commerce Clause because the gun was never part of any interstate commerce in the first place. Is that the way you understand it?
That is correct. That's one of the major loopholes that the government has always had a stranglehold on the American people.
Right.
The original Second Amendment didn't say that men in this country had the freedom to only defend their life with muzzle loaders. It didn't say that they had, it didn't say, okay, yeah, you guys, you can defend your life. We'll give you a slingshot or here's a bow and arrow. It doesn't state that. It says that we have the right to defend ourselves by any means necessary, is how it would be translated. But they look at that and say, no, sorry. See, you're a civilian. You're only allowed to carry these kind of firearms. You can't have what the military has. Well, that's wrong. There's nothing in our Constitution that says that you can only have a civilian-type weapon, but the military can have something so much more advanced than you. If you have the money and the means, by all means, go get it. If you're a law-abiding citizen and you haven't, broken any laws or been a felon,
sure,
by all means. I think everybody should be able to own whatever they want.
Yeah, well, and I tend to agree with you. You know, the Constitution does not make any stipulation as to what type of firearms we can own. That's kind of up for debate. I think that we may even see somebody petition the Supreme Court to try to decide what type of firearms, but that's a whole subject, I think, for a whole another podcast.
Oh, yeah. So, and really, it's even with this 1685, House Bill, State Bill 1685, that is, when he vetoed that, he's essentially telling the people of Oklahoma, you're not smart enough to think for yourself.
That's
Let
right.
Let me think for you. I'm going to do the thinking for you because I think what's best for you. That's like me telling people in my neighborhood, you know what, you guys, you need to go to a Baptist church because that's what I feel is best for you.
Right.
But that's not right. That's no better than someone telling me that I need to go to a different place of fellowship, or maybe I need to take up golfing because my next-door neighbor says that that's the best thing to do and that's what you really need to do for your life. That's what makes us Americans. That's what makes us free. The adults need to be able to choose for ourselves. And when he vetoed that, he's essentially telling us that we're not smart enough to distinguish right from wrong, so he'll help us.
Well, and that's a good point. Now, that brings me to another question that I want to ask you and see what you think, because I don't live in Oklahoma, you do. Now, from what I understand, the legislature in Oklahoma is trying to override the governor's veto. Is that correct?
Yes, he is. As a matter of fact, I've written all my representatives in the state of Oklahoma. I've even talked to Tom Comer himself, and their thoughts are that they're for it. They're for the bill. They want it to pass. I believe I sent you an email from one of the representatives who emailed me and said, that was not the greatest moment in our history. Hopefully we can get this overturned. And that at least makes me feel a little bit better. I'm doing my part to contact my representatives. I'm doing my part to talk to them.
Good.
The one thing that a lot of people don't understand and what a lot of people don't realize is they're not your boss. You are their boss.
That's correct.
They're only hired because you elected them. And if they don't do a good enough job, don't complain about it. Elect somebody else.
Well, you know, and you're right. You're right. And sorry to interrupt you there, but and you're correct. And that's something I think that everybody in the United States is feeling right now. They're feeling the pain of being told what to do, not just by federal governments, but by state governments and so forth. And, you know, long range, I got another question I wanted to ask you. Regarding this Senate Bill 1685. What I'm reading here on the internet, it says that 8 states have passed the Firearms Freedom Act. Montana, do you know who else has done it?
I'm not sure off the bat because I'm not near the computer.
Okay. All right. So 8 states have passed it, and it's working its way through a lot of other legislatures in other states, but only Governor Brad Henry of Oklahoma is the only governor, from what I understand reading this, that has vetoed it.
Yeah, that just blows my mind how he has that much gall to sit there and say that he's gonna veto something, and what's his logic in it? And I read a comment on the email, or it was on the internet, on what his thoughts were on that, and it didn't make much sense to me. His thoughts were, and his reasoning was, it would make it more dangerous in the state of Oklahoma. How exactly is this gonna happen? How is that gonna make it more dangerous? And he said, well, because everybody be able to buy guns. Okay, well, so you're saying nobody's allowed to buy guns if they're made in the state of Oklahoma? What would be the other reason? And I'm assuming he's saying that it'd be easier for criminals. No, it's not.
No.
It really isn't.
No,
it wouldn't.
You have
to go through a NICS background check, just like you would for anything. If I bought a gun made in Texas or Montana and I live here in Oklahoma, it still has to go through an FFL, firearms dealer. And if it's a Class 3, then it has to go through a Class 3 dealer. I still have to pay a tax stamp. The only thing that this does is it Well, okay, it does two things. It does, the first thing it does is it allows the people of Oklahoma to be able to manufacture firearms in their own state and employ people, keep people
working. Yeah, create jobs. What a cool concept.
Yeah, create jobs. The other thing that it does is it takes us out of the government and the federal system where they are sitting there telling us, okay, you want a Class 3 MP5 full auto submachine gun. Sure. Okay. Pay $20,000 for it and then pay your $200 tax stamp to me. Because I deserve that $200 for you to be able to shoot whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, this is totally different. This is allowing people in Oklahoma to say, you know what, if I want to buy something, whether it be semi-auto, whether it be full auto, whether it be bolt action, it doesn't matter. And for those listening, guns still don't kill people because there are millions of gun owners out there and people don't die for them every day.
Yeah, that's true.
Several myself, and they sit in a safe. They don't grow legs and walk outside and start shooting people.
That is correct. Criminal. I'm so glad you made that point.
The other thing I'd like to point out for a lot of people is I can't believe some people out there would actually go as far as to sue a gun manufacturing company because their relative or their close friend was shot by a murderer using that particular firearm.
Yeah.
Are you really that stupid? Do you really need for me to educate you on the fact that it's the criminal that committed the crime, not the weapon? That's like me suing Ford. If somebody drove a Ford truck and ran over my leg, Ford didn't do it.
Right.
The guy driving did.
Oh, but I bet you there'd be some people that would try, you know, like to sue Ford over that. Sure, I'm sure there would.
Oh, I'm sure they would because they're sue happy and they're out. They think it's a quick and easy lottery ticket.
Yeah,
oh, here's my
yep.
way to win some money.
A lot of them have that attitude.
Yes, they do. They have a really poor attitude on life, and they're looking for that moment to be able to sue, no matter what the case or what the cause is. That's sad. It really is sad. I've heard instances where people have been sued for parking in someone else's spot.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Long Range, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that that bill been vetoed by the governor there. It seems to me like that veto is going to get overridden. But let's shift gears for a minute.
I sure hope it does.
I hope it does, too. Let's shift gears. I happen to know that you are a big proponent of RBCD ammo, and in other podcasts I have talked about the different types of ammo. But a listener asked me to talk about RBCD, and I had limited knowledge of it, but I know that you have extensive knowledge of RBCD ammo. You like to shoot 45s. You like to shoot 1911s. Tell us, why do you like RBCD ammo?
I like RBCD ammo for, several reasons. One, that if I'm going to use any type of round in my firearm to protect myself or to protect my family and from a perpetrator, anybody who means to do harm to me or try to kill me or any of my loved ones, I want to use the best ammo out there. Now, that's not to say that they are the number one best, but they're right up there. They're pretty close.
Right.
There will be people out there that are going to say, well, you know, Gold Dot is better than this, and that's what I use.
Right.
The bottom line is use what you are comfortable with using. Don't get something because somebody else said, well, this is the greatest, and use it. Because you're going to run into this problem. Just like not all men are created equal, well, not all guns are created equal either.
Well, you're right, and thanks for bringing that up. And so what is it about, what makes you feel comfortable about using RBCD ammo?
What makes me feel comfortable about it, Bob, is I wear it every single day. I keep a 1911 on me wherever I go because I have a concealed carry and I'm allowed to by the state of Oklahoma. And of course, let me reiterate, the Second Amendment should be my only concealed carry, period.
Amen.
Regardless of what anybody else says.
Amen.
The reason why I choose RBCD is factor one, it's the lightest ammo you're going to carry.
That's important.
You carry 8 rounds of 230-grain ball ammo from a .45 ACP in one hand and carry the same 8 rounds in an RBCD, that's a .45-grain There's a big difference. I mean, you're saying, well, hold on a second. You're going from 230 grains to 45 grains, so you're giving up a lot of weight there in grains of a bullet. So you're losing your defense factor. No, actually, you're not.
You're not, huh? Why?
And a lot, the reason why you're not is because a full metal jacket ball ammo, even though it's 230 grains, it's going to travel out of that handgun at a rate of about 750 to 950 feet per second.
Right.
If you go with a plus P, which then you're going to be running some hot loads, you're going to be running at 1,100 to 1,500 feet per second. That's going to have a lot of impact, because if you go with, sorry, I got a plane flying over my head here.
It's okay.
If you go with physics, the law of physics states that there's an equal and opposite reaction for everything. So the heavier the grain is in the front, the more the recoil is going to be on the backside as well.
That is correct.
When you're in a high stress situation and you're pointing your firearm downrange to the attacker coming at you, you're already nervous as it is. Of course, now your adrenaline is going to be kicked in too, and you need to just learn to focus when you are that excited and concentrate on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I've heard instances where police officers have been in a gunfight where they didn't even wear earplugs, because it happens so fast. And that's another thing too. You're not going to have time to go, oh, hold on a second, I need to put on my earplugs because they're picking tagging. It's just going to happen. So it's going to be loud to begin with. But they have been so focused, they could actually hear the brass hitting the ground, and it didn't affect them. Because your adrenaline, when your adrenaline kicks in, other senses are going to tone down. And that's a good thing, because if they didn't, all you'd be hearing is ringing bells for the next 5 hours while you're trying to dial 911.
So is RBCD ammo pretty quiet?
It's a lot more quiet and has less recoil because it's about 45 to 80 grains.
Okay.
Now, here's where there's a big difference. The difference is a 230-grain full metal jacket that I said runs about 750 to 950, and if you go with a plus P, around 1,400 feet per second.
Right.
A RBCD round runs at 2,400 feet per second.
Wow.
That's rifle velocity. That's pretty dadgum fast. Now, here's where your physics also plays in part. The faster the object goes, the harder it's also going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
The energy released from an RBCD 45 ACP round is around 2,500 foot-pounds of force when it hits or impacts the target.
How much?
That's a lot of force. 2,400 to 2,500 foot-pounds. Now, what that means is it has enough energy to lift 2,500 pounds 1 foot off the ground. That's what the foot-pounds means. So you hit somebody with that, they're not going to get up. The nicer thing about this ammo, Bob, is if you go with a 230-grain full metal jacket ball ammo, which is your standard plinking round, it's going to go into the target, it's going to go through the target, it may enter into another target.
That's correct.
I'm not saying it's going to happen every single time, but you do have more of a potential of that happening than you would, say, if it were a different type of round or a hollow point. But ball ammo being your regular plinking round has the potential of just continuing on through and just making a 45 ACP hole. Now, of course, you're going to bleed out through it, but unless you hit an actual vital organ like the heart or the lungs or any other vital organs, you're not going to do a whole heck of a lot of good. With the RBCD round, when it hits, it's designed to fragment or break up almost instantaneously on impact of soft tissue. If you hit sheetrock, it's going to go through it. If you hit like a center plate of steel, say, you happen to be in your vehicle and another vehicle drives alongside you, guys pull out a shotgun, they're pointed at you, they're shooting at you, and you have to shoot back, you're not going to actually be able to aim down the barrel of their shotgun. This, again, is not Hollywood. So you're going to be aiming as the best you can. If that hits the car door, it's going to go clean through it, and it's going to hit soft tissue, and it's going to fragment. The nice thing about the fact that it fragments on soft tissue is you don't have to worry about over-penetration. Hitting that individual, going through them, and hitting somebody else like your wife or your children, we don't want that. And we definitely don't want to have to deal with that mentally if that ever happened.
Oh, absolutely. You're exactly right. So the people who are concerned about the overpenetration issue would be really happy with RBCD. There is none with RBCD.
Right, there is none. There are some videos on YouTube that you can actually look up on the RBCD that shows the RBCD round hitting a cherry tomato. That's a small target, and it completely fragments by the time it exits that cherry tomato. It disintegrates the cherry tomato in the process, but the fact that the round was actually disintegrated as it exited the cherry tomato means it dumped its entire energy load right there on that cherry tomato. It didn't continue on to take out other things. Go ahead.
You know, so long range, I wanted to ask you then. So let me ask you to get back to something you said earlier. Do you find that the RBCD ammo, as compared to regular 230-grain full metal jacket, do you find that it recoils less?
Oh, yes. On a 45, it's going to have about as much recoil as a 38.
Is that right?
Possibly even less than the 38. I shoot it for practice whenever I go out to the range. I'll take a box of those just for practice, just to make sure that they're good. And if I have a set that I've had for, say, a year, it's time for me to go shoot them and go buy another box. You don't want to keep and store ammo for a long period of time because that's not really feasible.
So it recoils less. It's hard hitting. Yeah. It's high velocity. It's a fragmented type of bullet, so it's not going to overpenetrate. That sounds like some good benefits to me.
Oh, yes, it's definitely good benefits. And not to mention the fact it's lighter. You're not going to have to worry about carrying that extra weight on your hip all day long. Most people are going to resort to carrying a lightweight gun, say a polymer gun. Smith & Wesson makes a really lightweight. The FN57 is another lightweight polymer gun. I think almost the entire gun is polymer, except for the barrel. And I like that because that's reduced weight. They don't do that to make it easier to run through a metal detector, like most people would think. Well, you can run through a metal detector with that. No, you can't. Try to put a pin spring in your pocket and walk through a metal detector and see what happens. Yeah. It'll detect everything on you.
It'll set it all off.
It's not possible.
Well, for those people who are listening, I'm sorry to interrupt you. For the people who are listening real quick, I want to give out the web address. It's www.rbcd.net, rbcd.net.
That's good information too on that. That round, I would say I chose it because it's shaped just like a ball ammo. It's rounded on the nose. It's going to feed flawlessly every single time. If you have a feeding problem using that, it's not the round. It's your gun.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's going to feed well. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm all about reliability, and if it's going to feed well, that's what's important. And if it's good defensive ammo and it won't jam your gun, that's pretty high in my book. Long range, thanks for your info on RBCD ammo. If I could, I'd like to change the subject again. I want to ask you about something else because you and I have had this discussion before, I think over lunch or dinner. And I just got done doing a podcast about this, so some of the listeners will appreciate it. I define assault as an action, not a gun. In other words, an assault rifle is kind of bogus because there are very few rifles that are actually an assault rifle. A fully automatic is my view of a true assault rifle, but I think assault is something that a person does rather than a firearm. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree on both those instances. Assault is something that you actually do to an individual, whether it be assault and battery, assault with deadly force, or, as you're saying, an actual assault weapon. For a lot of people out there, and this is the one thing that irritates me the most, it irritates me to no end to hear a guy on the radio giving a broadcast, talking to another individual on the phone, and this is one that I heard several months ago on the radio about a gunman in a grocery store with a quote-unquote assault rifle. And when he was asked what kind of rifle it was, it says it was one of those AR-15 assault rifles. I I clamored to my phone to give this guy a call to say, was it fully auto? Because unless that firearm is full auto or has select fire, and the definition of select fire does not mean I can switch it from safety to unsafe. That's not select fire. Select fire means I can go from pulling the trigger one time and I get one round, or I can pull the trigger one time and I get three rounds, or I can pull the trigger one time and it will empty the magazine or it will continue to fire until I release the trigger. That's a select fire, and that's also a fully automatic.
Mm-hmm.
If your firearm does that, guess what? It's an assault rifle. And there's nothing really wrong with assault rifles. They have been demonized by the media, by the public, who view everything as an assault rifle. And what they don't understand is, and what a lot of other people that support them don't understand is, look, you banned that based solely on the practice that some idiot called an AR-15 an assault rifle. And you said, well, I don't think anybody should own one of those anyhow. Those things are dangerous because I watched it on Hollywood.
And it goes back to one of your original points about how they think they know best.
They do. They do think they know best. One, if they got that banned, and Lord willing, this never happens, but if they did, what is going to stop them from going that much further? What's going to stop them from going to a bolt-action rifle and saying, well, see, that bolt-action rifle, that's a sniper rifle. Them things are dangerous. You can put someone's eye out in a mile.
You know, I didn't think of that. That's right. If they start banning, you know, rifles based on what they think is bad, they could be calling bolt-action 308s and a sniper rifle.
Exactly. And what's really to stop them from doing it? And that brings up this point. What's to stop them? Us. The American citizens have employed them. It's up to us to elect officials in office that are going to do their job right.
Yeah.
Not those that think that they're going to do their job for us, but think that they can think better for us because we're too stupid to think for ourselves. We need to put people in office that say, hey, long range, hey, Bob, what's your thoughts on this? What do you think we should do with our great state? Should we implement this? We're going to leave it up to the vote of the people. That's what it has always should have been, but
yeah,
it's not.
That's right.
It's more to the point of, oh, I'm in office. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
I can get away with pretty much anything.
Yeah,
well, that'd
you're
be
exactly
nice if
right.
we could all do that, but we all can't. And they're not really that important. They hold an important position. Don't misread that. They do got an important position, but they need to understand their position that they have was given to them by the people.
The power was given to them by the people. That's right.
And it can be taken away just as quick as it can be given. So,
and it just
someone,
might
when
be.
Someone does that. Yeah, and it just might be.
And it just might.
You know, that's, assault rifles are few if none. Yes, you can buy one if you have the money. People say, well, by golly, man, them fully automatic machine guns, they're all over the place. Gang members have them all the time. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
I don't know what movies you've been watching, but you need to get a hard dose of reality. That's not the case.
No.
And here's a perfect example of what I mean. Let's say I decide tomorrow I want to buy a Heckler & Koch MP5 fully automatic 9mm machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds pretty hefty. But it's not
sounds
really
like
that
it.
Hefty. It's shooting a 9mm round, and it's just throwing a whole lot of bullets downrange. Your accuracy is going to suck. You're not going to be able to hit every single pop can if you lined them all up shooting full auto.
It's probably
you might
true.
Hit one. You might hit two. It's more of a status symbol or more of just a bragging right saying, yeah, I got a full auto. But here's the thing that people don't understand. Go and try and buy one. They're $20,000 just for one.
Ouch.
20 grand. For
whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
20 grand. I'd rather go buy a rifle that does, you know, $4,000 or less. But,
buy a lot of ammunition for $20,000 and take a lot of training classes, and you can give your guns 1,000-round trigger jobs for $20,000 too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the other thing. You also have to pay the ATF to a $200 tax stamp.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay you have to go get your fingerprints done. Then you have to go get paperwork and pass, get an okay from the ATF, the like here in Oklahoma, the OSBI, your sheriff's department. And then once you get that stamp, it's not like you get it in a week. It may take anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Before you'll get that tax stamp.
Yep.
You don't have possession of this firearm. You have to pay for it first. After you pay for it and you've done all the paperwork, then you have to play the waiting game. That doesn't mean that they're going to accept it. Now, granted, I'll bet you 99% they're going to pass it. They're going to accept it and say, here you go. Because
right.
you've done it according to their rules.
You've jumped through the hoops.
And you've waited. You've jumped through all the hoops. Now you get to take it home, and then you get to clean it. And by all means, for you new gun owners out there, please, if you buy a firearm, do not take it to the range and shoot it without taking it home and cleaning it first.
Oh, good point. I'm glad you brought that up. That's something that I have forgot to mention on this show. Thank you, Long Range, for bringing that up. That is so true. Don't go straight to the range after you buy it. That's true.
You know, here's what I hear. Well, it's brand new. Yeah, so, and your point is what? You have no point. The first thing that you should do is you should take that home. You should field strip it, and you should clean it, and you should put all new grease in it. The reason why is because that grease that's in there is not acceptable for shooting the firearm. It's packing grease. It's there to keep it from rusting. That's all it's designed for. You need to take it home, and there's several reasons why. One, you need to make sure that what you bought is everything's there. There's nothing broken, nothing cracked, no metal shavings or anything in it. Two, you want to clean it because you want to make sure that your firearm works and operates efficiently.
Right.
Three,
right.
You should know your firearm. You should be able to take the thing apart and put it back together with your eyes closed.
Yes.
If you don't know your firearm very well and you don't know how to take it apart and put it back together, then you're going to spend a good majority of your time saying, hey, buddy, can you come over to the house? I took my gun apart and I forgot how to put it back together. That's bad. Because he may not have time to come over to your house and help you. And meanwhile, you got some other guy trying to break in your house that's going to rob you, and you've got a dismantled firearm that you don't know how to put back together.
Well, and thank you for reinforcing that point. Thank you, because I've made that point many times. It helps you get your firearm. Yeah, we got to wrap it up in about 2 or 3 minutes, but you're on a good subject. So we got about 2 minutes left, but you're on a good subject, so finish it up. That's great.
Okay. Well, here I'll finish it up on the firearm safety. That don't ever think that because you're buying a firearm, and even after you go through all the cleaning and you take it apart and you know how to put it back together, that you are well equipped on saving yourself, because you're only going to shoot 1/3 as good as you do at the range. And if you only shoot maybe once a month or maybe even once a year, you're not being very proficient. I had a lady ask me one time, well, why do you even carry a firearm? I says, well, do you have a fire extinguisher in your house? Yeah. Okay. Are you expecting a fire? No. Well, then why do you have a fire extinguisher in your house? And he said, well, because you might have a fire. I said, okay. Ask me why I carry a firearm on me, and I'm going to tell you that the reason why is not because I'm expecting a fire to happen. But I'd rather be prepared and never have a fire than not prepared and watch my house burn to the ground. Or in this case, be not prepared and have someone take my life or my family's life because I was unprepared. So you
absolutely
need to go, and you need to practice constantly. There are a lot of classes out there that you can take. I know H&H here in Oklahoma offers the classes, and this is one I love too, for women, $45 for women only.
Nice.
And it's for beginners all the way to advanced. They will teach you everything from the basics all the way up to professional.
Nice.
You need to take that class. And here's another thing. A lot of people are going to ask, well, what kind of class should I take? Should I just take a basic shooting class? Or, you know, I don't think I need to be tactical. Well, there's where you make the mistake.
Uh-huh.
Don't think that because you're going to just shoot and practice shooting that you don't need to think tactical. There's a reason why they call it tactical. There's a reason why people need to practice and think more tactical, and that's because you need to always have your alert level at least yellow. It doesn't have to be at red, but it at least needs to be yellow. Why? It's because if you're always relaxed and you always walk around like, ain't nothing going to happen to me, you're the person that's going to get picked on the most.
Well, that could be true.
You've got your guard down.
That could be true.
If you practice just the way police officers practice all the time, and they offer these classes continuously down at the range, you're going to make yourself a lot better and a lot more proficient, and you're going to build yourself more confident because you're going to be more self-aware of everything that's around you.
Exactly.
I'll leave that note with saying that there ain't no better safety than your finger. if your finger's not on the trigger, then you ain't going to shoot the gun. So keep in mind, safety, safety, safety. So if your finger's not on the trigger, that's your first safety. If your gun is pointing down range, that's your other safety. If you're aiming at your target and you know what's beyond the backstop, that's your third safety as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Keep in mind that your finger is your number one safety. Not the safety part on your gun, but your finger.
You got that right. Long range, you know what? Thank you very much for echoing a lot of what I have said on this show. And to everybody listening, I want to say something. Long Range Tactical did not know that I was going to call him and do this. This was a very impromptu, all I did was I called him up and I said, hey, would you like to talk about this? And he said, sure. So even though you heard him say a lot of the things that I've said, I want you to know this was not a setup. I didn't plan this. I just called him up. Is that right?
As a matter of fact, you caught me in the middle trying to unload a steel lathe into my shop, and I forgot the truck sitting there waiting for me to finish it off.
And I will let you get back to that. Thank you very much for coming on to the show. You've made great, great points. I really appreciate it. And the next time I see you, I owe you a nice dinner for it.
Well, that'll work. Or we can just go out to the range and do some shooting. Either way,
we'll go out to the range and do some shooting, and I'll bring all the ammo. How's that?
Sounds good.
Thanks for coming on, and I'll let you get back to unloading your truck and unloading that lathe.
No problem. Thank you very much. Have a good day, Bob.
Take care. Long Range Tactical, folks, from today's Survival Show Forum. Okay, folks, hopefully you enjoyed that as much as I did. Long Range Tactical is a friend of mine. Again, like I mentioned, he didn't know I was going to do this, but he has some really good ideas. I knew he would give a good interview no matter whether I set it up or not. I'm also kind of glad that he talked about fully automatic weapons and how difficult they are to own here in the United States. A listener did send me a message about a month ago asking me if I would talk about the laws and some of the different nuances of owning a fully automatic weapon here in the United States. Not that easy to do. A lot of people have a misconception, especially people who don't live in this country, or there are people even who do live in the country that don't understand our gun laws. And I didn't really want to answer that myself. I wanted to wait until I could get Long Range Tactical on the podcast to answer that. So, sir, thank you for sending me that email request, and I hope that you got your answer that you were looking for from this interview. And let me just wrap up the show by telling all of you, thanks again for tuning in to episode 53. If you could support the Handgun World Show, I'd very much appreciate that. As you know, I've said many times, this is not my full-time job, just my hobby, something I'm passionate about. Just to keep the show going, there are some small costs that are incurred from time to time, and if you could just help it out, keep it going, that'd be great. If you don't, you won't hurt my feelings, folks. Seriously, I have a blast doing this show. So please don't feel any pressure. There is a donate button on the front page. And by the way, the website is handgunworld.com. If you're on iTunes, search Handgun World Show. Give me some comments on iTunes. Give me some comments on the blog. If you've got some more questions that you want me to answer, or Long Range Tactical, I'm sure he'd probably come back on for a second interview. And folks, once again, if you are interested in coming on the Handgun World Show, send me an email and let's talk about it. Thank you, folks. I appreciate it. This is Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley.